This is the 2 North Jackson Podcast with news, insights, details, and accomplishments from Alabama's 67 county governments. Welcome to the November edition of the 2 North Jackson Podcast. This month, we'll focus our attention on productive uses of funding from the American Rescue Plan Act, speaking with one unified voice, and the operation of 911 services here in Alabama. We'll start this month's discussion with an in-depth look at one county's efforts to utilize ARPA funding in a way to transform the community and the county government. And our guests today are Ray Long, Morgan County Commission Chairman, and Randy Vest, a member of the Morgan County Commission, both past presidents of the association. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting us, Sonny. We look forward to this.
Thanks, Sonny. Appreciate it so much.
Well, first, let's start with kind of where we are today. We are a year and 8 months out from the passage of the American Rescue Plan Act, and certainly all Alabama counties have been working very hard to devise a plan that can utilize this money in a transformative way. Ray, could you talk a little bit about the County Commission's planning process for the use of this money?
Well, when we first found out we was getting this money, we actually getting $23 million. We just started amongst ourselves talking about ways that we could spend it. You know, it's really unusual for counties to get handed this much money at one time, knowing that there's a lot of things you'd love to do, but these funds has a lot of guidelines on it, but it's money that we could use to make our county something better, something that we could use from now on and people see what we've done. Of course, Sonny, the first thing we done with our money is give our employees some. President Biden, when he signed the bill, really emphasized taking care of your employees and people that may have been set back and hurt because of COVID. And so our first action was to reach out and give our employees $5,000, spread it out over 16 weeks so they wouldn't run out and buy something real quick thinking they're going to keep getting it. But we tried to do that. And then from there, we just started trying to set goals for what we want to do. And one of the major things we're going to do is replace the heating and cooling unit in our courthouse. It's outdated. The building was built in 1973. Still got the same unit in it that was there when the courthouse was built. A lot of the offices, the switches don't work. You got one floor may be hot, the next and cold. And we do hear a lot of complaints over that. And we have an old chiller system. So we're looking to replace that. And we're hoping that we can really lay the groundwork on how we're going to change it in December. We're in the process of hiring an architect and engineer to see what we really need. That's one of our major goals.
Well, Randy, let me ask you about one thing that Ray mentioned, and that was providing funding to the employees under what was called premium pay. And I know in some counties, commissioners were concerned about entering into that expenditure for fear that the employees would not be able to adjust to the fact that the money was only for a short time. I know it's been several months since that program concluded. What kind of reaction did you have from county employees?
Well, it was really great from our employees' perspective. They appreciate it very much because we noticed through the pandemic how they did not take advantage of the offerings that we put in place as far as COVID pay. If they were sick, if they had a family member that was sick, there was no questions asked. They were allowed to stay home with them, and the employees really appreciated it, and we appreciate our employees not taking advantage of those and wanted to make sure that they realized how much we appreciated it and them working and trying to make sure that the services we provided were still able to be carried out.
Well, one of the things Ray also mentioned was replacing the HVAC system in the courthouse. And many counties are looking at utilizing funding for that very purpose as well, because it's a big need all across the state. What's been the reaction around the courthouse with the discussion of you utilizing funds for that?
Well, they're all excited because, as I said before, it really don't work as good as it did when they installed it in 1973. And I never realized that till I got to be chairman. But we have people on the same day that will have space heaters running, and on another floor they'll have fans. It's just really not a good balance. And so everybody's excited when they heard we're going to use a lot of our money to update that process and make it something where we can have controls on each floor.
And I assume without the ARPA money, this is a project that probably would not have risen to the top of your list very quickly.
No, it probably wouldn't, because we're anticipating probably between $7 and $8 million. And the way our tax base is, we just don't have that funds just sitting there for us to use. And it wouldn't have been a top priority. It's something we'd eventually looked at, but would have had to do it in stages. And this way, we're hoping we could just do it all at one time and make everybody happy. That's going to be hard for us being politicians to do. We're going to do our best with this heating and cooling.
Well, and it's not just the people that work there. It's the members of the public. And Randy, another issue I know that the county experienced during COVID was the building designed in the 70s really wasn't designed to space citizens out. And those challenges that came from COVID, that was very difficult for you as well.
Definitely. When people came and they were asked to wear a mask, of course, we provided those type things for them, but it became an issue for them because they felt like a lot of the instances they were being told that they weren't able to conduct business that they needed to do. So we're looking toward those type things. You know, the HVAC not only will be able to set temperatures between floors, but it'll be a state-of-the-art system. So the filtration will help to prevent spread of disease, whether it be flu or whatever, moving forward. So the employees, the general public, are really going to benefit from these. And the waiting room that the chairman's mentioned that we're in architectural stages to discuss about how to add that to the existing facility. For years, we have had the issue of dealing with long lines, especially in the license department, and this waiting room will help eliminate that so it provide a better service for our general public.
Chairman, let's talk about the waiting room idea a little bit. As I mentioned, I don't suspect there's a single county courthouse in the state that was designed to react to the problems we faced in 2020 with 6 feet of distance. We want to check your temperature, but we don't want to get close to you. We want you to go through a metal detector, but we don't want you to get close to the person in line behind you. I know your courthouse had a real challenge in that regard, and maybe this money is something you can use to help alleviate that too.
Well, we hope it will. As Commissioner Vest said, we had people just for driver's license. They'd be sitting in the halls everywhere. And you really can't space people out to 6 feet when you do that. But we spent $100,000 or more on glass, putting in the offices, separating the general public from our employees. But now the general public, when they come to buy license or pay taxes and stuff, they still need to be separated some too. And we've done the 6 feet tape and all this stuff. But the waiting room's going to be so much better that they can go in and sit and wait. And we'll have a kiosk that they can register in when they come in, and a speaker to call the number and say, Mr. Smith, come on to the tag office. And all of that's going to be so much better. And it's good now that COVID is slowly fading away, but we know it would help with the flu or anything. So this will help our citizens. And not only that, it's a lot easier to sit down in a waiting room than just stand in a line for an hour. So we're just trying to make it better for our citizens. And this is something probably wouldn't have been able to do without the ARPA money, because you're looking at probably $2-3 million for something like this. But it is needed. And as you said, probably not many courthouses was built with waiting rooms.
No, and again, the general public comes, and I travel around a bunch, and there are lines out in halls. You know, the probate office is right across the hall from the tag office, and you can't walk down the hall because the waiting lines are intertwined with each other, because the courthouse wasn't designed with any of today's concerns, the security issues that we all unfortunately have to think about. And that's the kind of thing that we had in mind when we said at the start of this journey, let's be transformative. Let's look at our problems and try to do things that we couldn't do otherwise. And I don't think very many counties would have made HVAC systems a priority. I don't think very many counties would have made spacing and security issues a priority without this money. And so around the country, people talk about how difficult this money is to spend. I don't really see it that way. I think there are plenty of very positive and transformative issues that we can use the money on. We just got to look.
Yeah, and that's what we're doing. Of course, we signed on early to the IEC program, and they have really been a great help with us as far as guidance and stuff. But we're one county that I can guarantee you won't send any money back. We're going to find ways to spend it. And just security, we spent about $50,000 at both the front and back, boxing them in, putting glass all the way around them, and giving them gloves. And, you know, they have to deal with the general public when they come in. And you and I would probably not get out in public if we knew we had COVID, but you'd be surprised the number of people that do, even with the flu. They get out and mingle like nothing's wrong. And so this is just going to be a benefit from now on.
Well, and again, from the very start, the reaction around the country was, oh no, this money is going to be more trouble than it's worth. But I'm with you. I don't know any county in Alabama who wants to send any money back. And collectively, we found a way to make it work. Randy, I know y'all've got some other things on the drawing board, other projects you're thinking about, some needs in the community, like mental health and farmers market and some other things that you're still looking at because you hadn't allocated every penny yet, correct?
Well, that's true. We definitely have not, but we've got many partners within the county that we've already been working with, and those have many needs, so we're going to see if we can help out several of those in the projects that they're looking to do. Mental health is a huge concern, not just in our county, but throughout the state and the nation, and we're partnering with them so that they can have the services, the facility, and the things that they need in order to address the issues at hand.
Well, guys, I appreciate very much your leadership, your active involvement in ensuring that you utilize this money to the very, very best way possible. As Marcus would say if he was with us, appreciate you to the highest for working very hard with this money. And let me get this straight. Randy, you're the admiral, right?
Yes, sir.
And Ray, you're the eater. No, you're the slugger, right?
Yeah, exactly. But now the sluggers do like to eat.
Yeah, that's right. Well, guys, I appreciate very much you joining us. Take a few minutes to talk about your use of the ARPA funding.
We'll now turn our attention to the county family speaking with one voice in a little unusual way. And our guest today is Joey Nunley, the county engineer in Baldwin County. And Joey, very active in the County Engineers Association. Been working with Baldwin County for creeping up on 20 years. So, Joey, you ought to be a veteran at this. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank y'all for having me.
And we're going to have a little conversation today with some activities that might seem to be a little outside the wheelhouse of a county engineer, in the hopes that the other engineers or other members of the county family who are uncomfortable doing things we ask you to do might see that it's important and that you can really, really have a positive impact. The county engineers face a couple of pretty tough policy issues in the coming legislative session. One deals with weight limits on county roads, and the other deals with liability for road construction projects. And the county engineers had a very productive discussion around efforts in an organized way for engineers to help spread the word and to frame these two policy issues in a way that can be very productive for us going forward next year. So Joey was the very first engineer who found himself out front talking about these two issues. So I thought it might be productive for you to talk a little bit about your experience, Joey.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to share my experience. It's still going on. I literally just got through doing an interview with Channel 15 down here at Mobile about the topic of the logging bill. But the opportunity presented itself to discuss the logging bill and the contractor liability issue at the MPO, I think it was about 2 weeks ago.
For those of us who don't know, the MPO is...
It's a Metropolitan Planning Organization. Not all counties have those. We've only had one for about 10 years. And once your population gets to be a certain threshold, then the feds require you to create a MPO, or Metropolitan Planning Organization, which is basically ran by a board of politicians where they bring all of the transportation needs and everybody's on the same page on how to move forward.
It was a good opportunity for you to catch more than county officials to discuss these two issues.
That is correct. Two of my county commissioners actually have a seat on the board, and ALDOT has a seat on the board, and then the other members of the board are made up of city councilmen and mayors.
And so at the last meeting of that MPO, you, I think, had some materials from meetings that we'd had here that certainly the staff can make available to anyone else and discuss the issues in detail, right?
Yeah, that's right. And so just to kind of clarify the detail point, so you have to kind of know your audience a little bit. Us as engineers can get a little too detailed at times. And some of the materials that was handed out at our meeting at ACCA, George Connor with the DOT handed out a bunch of data. And that data was pretty detailed and thorough. It came off of the sampling of about 20,000 trucks that they had weighed on the side of the road to get some good data. And he analyzed it many, many, many different ways and presented that to us up at the meeting. So I took that and I just kind of pared that down to simplify it a little bit and to communicate that better to the audience that I was speaking to, which was obviously my two county commissioners and the mayors, city councilmen, and the general public. I did not know at the time I was doing this that there was actually a reporter from AL.com sitting in the audience listening to that. And she actually called me a couple of days later and wanted to do an article on the logging bill. Now, she told me she was going to give me a call later on down the road to do one on the contractor liability that I also discussed, but she wanted to focus more on the logging bill. And so I was able to talk her through the main points from everything from the safety issues of the logging trucks carrying more weight and it being unsafe on the road to how much more damage they're going to be doing to the bridges and, with the same importance, how much damage they're going to do to our roadway structures and how to counteract that. That's kind of how I presented it. I think that resonated a little bit with the board and with the media.
You know, I think one of the reasons we discussed county engineers kind of fanning out into the MPOs to discuss this issue is a similar goal we have when other policy questions and policy challenges arise, and that is, who are the other groups that should be engaged on our behalf or that should be allies that we don't have working with us now? And certainly the cities that are part of your MPO and that in every county in the state should be just as concerned about this as we are.
Absolutely, which is the reason that I decided to present this to the MPO, because I hit four municipalities with that one presentation and it hit home. They all agreed that this was not a good bill. So it was a good opportunity. And I would say that others need to take advantage of that opportunity as well.
You know, it's 3 months till the legislative session begins. What we're doing now and what we'll be doing at the legislative conference next month and what we'll be doing in the district meetings in the first of 2023 is building momentum and informing ourselves and others about the impacts of legislation that's concerning to us. And so is there any reason why other county engineers, administrators, other county employees should not be willing to step out like this and help us impact public policy matters?
No. You know, they need to be prepared for a phone call from the media, but that's part of our responsibility. We are charged with making our roads and bridges safe for the traveling public, and this bill would not do that, in my opinion. Sometimes we have to step outside our comfort zone. So I would encourage them all to get out there, present this, and try to get out in front of this bill before it gains any momentum in the legislature.
Well, in the comfort zone quote is a good one. I think there are lots of people perhaps in county government who have not been as involved as you have and as many of your colleagues have that look at public policy issues and say, well, that's for that staff up in Montgomery to handle. And the truth is, our role is to know when we need to speak out and to know how we need to speak out, but then to arm the county officials and employees with the information so that they can speak out. And I think your experience has gotten us going in a very, very positive way as we get ready for the 2023 session. And we appreciate, A, very much you being willing to pick up the mantle and carry it, and B, for giving us a few minutes today, Joey. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity.
And our final topic of the month, we'll focus on something that everyone in Alabama should be very, very proud of, and that's our national leadership in the operation of 911 services. And today, Gordon Sandlin, who everyone in county government's very familiar with, the director of 911 in Coleman County, past president of our affiliate group, the Alabama Association of 911 Districts. Gordon, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Sonny. Good to be here.
And 911 is one of those things that, at least for me, I won't speak for everyone else in county government, we sometimes take for granted. There's somebody 24 hours a day who's going to take care of us. And as an affiliate group over the years, it's really, really been educational to me to learn how the 911 directors around the state work so well together and represent 911 with a very unified voice.
Yes, they do. I'm very proud of the fact that I'm a member of AAND, because the 911 directors throughout the state are pretty tight when it comes to 911, and they try to stick together and speak as one voice, and ACCA has really helped us do that.
Well, there are a lot of things over the last 20 years or so, the relationship between the two organizations that we all should be very proud of. But one of the things that we're really a national leader on is something that someone who's not techie like me doesn't understand very well how it works. I just know I want it to work. And that was the 911 districts identifying a real problem with your database of telephone numbers and the routing of calls. And the 911 leadership came together and solved that problem, and it's benefited everybody in Alabama.
Yeah, that happened several years ago when everybody was paying fees to vendors to direct their 911 calls through their networks. And brilliant minds came together and decided, hey, what if we owned our own network? We could save that money we're paying to them. And so they started brainstorming about it. And with the help of ACCA, got some laws passed. And now we have ANGEM, which is the Alabama Next Generation Emergency Number Network. And it works real well.
Well, and I think sitting on the outside, what you have is the 911 leadership and the 911 organizations at the local level now in control of your own data and the routing of calls, which again, is just a great example of the organization solving problems.
Yeah, 911 calls come in from a phone. It goes to the carrier. The carrier sends it to Angen. Angen routes it to the proper district to handle the call. Now, Angen's actually overseen by the Alabama State Board, and they've done a great job of doing that. But that was through legislation also, which ACCA and AND were involved in from the ground up.
And you're exactly right. The example of entities and leaders at the local level identifying a problem and solving it together is what AAND has done for a long time. And 911 is an integral part of county government. In many cases, there's a separate board, but it's not separate. The commission and the 911 leaders have to work together, right?
Yes, they do, because 911 is a county entity, and how 911 goes in that county is kind of how the county government is seen. Is if it operates and is doing well, then the county government is seen in a good light by the voters and by the people who put them in office.
The citizens don't really know that there's a separate board. And even if they knew there was a separate board, it wouldn't really mean very much to them. They see 911 as a part of county government, and that's why we work so closely together. I know you and your colleagues have tackled a number of problems over the years in addition to the statewide network. And one of those is the issue of the distribution of audio recordings of 911 calls. Here in Alabama, the law is very, very different from almost anywhere else in the country, right?
Yeah, it sure is. And the 911 directors and the 911 community always wanted to protect those calls as best they could to protect the citizens. You know, under federal law, in order to listen in on a conversation between two people, you got to have a court order signed by a judge, pretty much. Otherwise, it's illegal or it can't be presented in court. And a lot of the press and people like that wanted to get instant recordings of devastating 911 calls. And we felt like that would be something that would discourage people from calling 911. And some of those calls, it's hard enough just to be on the call with somebody, much less to make that public. And AAND came together and we got the law so that we could at least protect that to a point. We understand the public has a right to certain things. So now we have to have a court order before we can release anything like that. And I have to give it to certain people. And then they have to be protective of that call also to keep it from getting out there too bad.
Well, and during the 2022 regular session, there was a bill introduced to make some adjustments to that law as a result of a court case. And as AAND has done during its entire existence, AAND and the association were on the forefront of the negotiating and making some changes that do give the public access under limited circumstances of copies of transcripts. But the audio recording was an important thing to protect exactly for the reasons you said.
Yeah, even I don't like the portion in the law about the transcripts. I still think we need a court order on a transcript too, just like we do the call. But it's there, and it still has to be met certain criteria before anybody can get it. And so far, from what I can understand in the state, there has been very few people that wanted a transcript or asked for a transcript.
And of course, we all know what's going on in our country and here in Alabama in trying to recruit and retain quality employees. And I know that at the local level in the 911 industry, you're facing the same kind of issues as we go forward. As we conclude, could you talk a little bit about the challenges that 911 is facing in attracting and retaining top employees?
Well, as you said, it's not just 911 that's having that problem, but for a telecommunicator to sit behind a call screen and a console, if you ever sat down in front of one, you would think, I'm flying an airplane, because there's a lot of things going on at one time. And finding good people who can handle that job with the pay that you can give them is very hard to do. Everybody deserves more pay. And let me first say, we got some fantastic telecommunicators in this state, and they're committed to their job because they love what they do, because they're there to serve the citizen. So we're trying to figure out inventive ways in order to try to attract good employees. But yes, we're in the same boat as everybody else is trying to keep good employees, number one. And number two is trying to hire good, qualified people who can handle the job, because it's not something just anybody can do.
And as you said, things are certainly much more complicated today than they were even 5 or 10 years ago. Recruiting of employees is certainly an important part of that. But there's no question that the 911 directors have been innovative. And they've been on the forefront of this industry nationally. And AAND and ACCA have certainly been partners in working together to make things more effective, as you said, for the citizens of Alabama. And so, Gordon, we appreciate you taking a few minutes to visit with us today and to talk about our 911 professionals in Alabama. And we look forward, as the legislative session approaches, to working together in the coming months.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Y'all have a good day.
And this will conclude our Two North Jackson podcast for November. We look forward to talking with you next week at the Association's Legislative Conference in Montgomery and visiting together and focusing on our legislative agenda. And of course, we encourage you to join us at the end of December for the next Two North Jackson podcast.